Hello and welcome to the Heart Song Yoga Podcast. I'm Kelly.
And I'm Sarah.
And today we are going into our asana series, which is just going through key yoga asanas and points about them a bit beyond just the physical, how do you set this up and do it? Let's sort of go more into benefits and alignment in all layers of being and breath work, and then some of the result-like sort of experiences that we have in them. So starting today with the cat, Majariasana, if you're looking for the Sanskrit term, we can start with the benefits of it.
Yes, the cat, you know, I've often said to people, if there's one practice you do, for example, over the holidays when I don't run any classes, just do the cat, because it has many benefits. Apart from the fact that you're focusing on your spine and bringing in some flexibility and removing some tightness from your spine that ripples all the way up through every energy center, in that process, you're freeing up. But when you're on all fours, there's also that little bit of upper body weight bearing that you get through the front of your body as well, if you're nicely aligned. And your wrist flexors, you know, you're sort of getting some stretching in through your wrist flexors. Core stability, you know, you're working against gravity, so you are developing with awareness some core strengthening. Any more that you feel, Kel?
It's just sort of very good full spinal movement, flexion and extension in a very safe way. So I think that's one of the great things about it, is that It's excellent for just freeing up and removing tension from the spine in a very safe fashion, you know.
Yeah.
And it's very easy in the cat to be aware of your core and aware of the relationship to gravity that you have. Whereas if you were, say, doing a standing back bend or something like that, that might be a little bit harder to control.
Yeah.
So I think it's a fabulous asana just for, you know, kind of working kinks out of the spine in a very gentle and safe and yet still powerful environment.
Yeah, I feel that.
And there are plenty of, you know, ways to make it work for you. If you have problems with your wrist extension or you have problems with your knees, you can work with that quite easily and still get, there's no compromise in the spinal movement, even if you have to change the way your hands and knees are arranged.
Absolutely.
So there's that too.
One of those practices, you could do a standing version of it if you can't get it down. You can even get a pretty good, you know, cat sort of stretch sitting in a chair. There's many options. It's sort of one of those.
You have to be very gentle about the back bend part, that you don't sort of put too much pressure on your lower back. But, yeah, you could definitely, it's with a chair with a back for sure, because you can use that for your proprioception as well. Sitting on a football works. But once again, you're changing a little bit to me then about what it means to be doing the cat, which is that relationship with gravity, that push and pull against it. If I'm sitting up, I find that it's more of a feel of waving in the wind like a tree.
Another
spinal
option, really.
Movement is similar. It is. Oh yeah, absolutely. But it's just interesting to play into, how does that make you feel on sort of a more playful level? The cat brings back to me that sense of hands and knees. It's a very childlike position to be in.
I was exploring it a bit more deeply this week on all fours, and I sort of put myself down on the floor and then getting into sort of aligning myself, it was almost like this thing came to me, like, no wonder it's related to the cat, because cats cannot be rushed.
And, yes.
You know, cats just take their time when they're waiting at the door. They'll leave you waiting there all day if you've opened the door for them. They'll come in their own time. And as I was positioning myself, I thought, yeah, you can't just, I mean, you could just come down all fours, be quite mindless and do a few flex and flattens. But set yourself up is really quite a mindful process, to place your sort of hands on the floor and feeling like they're directly under your shoulders, and your knees, you know, nicely aligned under your hips, and then not feeling like you're pushing too far back or too far forward, and being aware of your wrist flexors and, you know, supporting if you need any extra support under there. And then being aware of gravity, working against gravity. So just sort of acknowledging, drawing in through your lower abs to feel that core support. So that you're aware of it and you can use this to strengthen it a little bit. to check that your elbows, you know, aren't, that you're not propping. You know, it's a habitual thing for some people to prop with their elbows, especially if you've got hypermobile joints.
So you mean like locked elbows?
Locked elbows, yeah. Mm. And because you just prop them
you can keep them soft.
Keep them soft, yeah. So by the time you get all that, and then you're sort of starting to feel that connection to the earth underneath, it's like your four legs, you know. How's the placement of your four legs, and are they nicely connected to the earth to begin this movement from? So you've got a nice foundation to work from.
Even if you're into the cat cow sort of variation of it, which I have heard in some yoga practices, it's still, they're animals that cannot be hurried.
You know, can't be hurried.
Who take their time and really connect with the earth.
Mm.
So.
But see, animals do connect to the earth, don't they? You know, they're quite connected to Mother Nature and the earth, but they'll go outside when they're not feeling well. And there's all those sort of like connections. But yeah, it really came to me, you know, a cat cannot be rushed.
Yeah, not at all.
Mm.
So I from a in physical perspective, there's that I find the most profound thing of it is that sense of relationship with the ground. And I've noticed in my more recent practice of it that actually, if you think about it in terms of energetic anatomy, so where are your chakras aligning when you're aligning your body in this pose? On the exhale, as you sort of curl your tailbone under and sort of take your head towards the ground further, you're actually kind of aligning everything with the earth. So the base and the crown connect very strongly with the earth at that position. And then in the inverse of it, as you inhale and open, you're connecting with the sky.
Mm.
I kind of liked that in terms of the breath work as well, because as you inhale and you open and you take your base and your crown chakras towards the sky, not in a direct U shape, obviously, it's going to be much too much extension of the spine, but you're inhaling the ether and the sky, the expansiveness, and then you sort of bring that back in and you take it down and you focus it and then you sort of distill that and you connect with the earth in that process. So it's an interesting way to think about it.
Well, they're nice qualities, you know, if you think about, you know, our five layers, and you can be very physical with it, but you're just now touching on some very pranic and perhaps even emotional layers where, or even deeper actually, that you can start bringing in from the earth, you know, as your base chakra is more leaning towards or connecting with the earth, that you bring in a deep sense of stability into your spine. You know, for some people, they need some stability into that lower part of their spine. And then as your crown connects up to the beautiful cosmos, you know, are you bringing that light in? You know, what would it feel like to fill your spine with light, or to fill your spine with stability or freedom or joy? You come into spaciousness in your spine. What does that feel like to explore? Then it becomes so much more than a physical practice. You start to really, you know, work into these other koshas and add to the experience.
Yeah, something that sort of I would encourage in all of your yoga practices, you know, what more can you discover with this?
It's like value adding, isn't it?
What more can you find? Yeah.
Yeah. It's like value adding as opposed to, you know, there's a lot of benefit in just being very present with your physical body as you come to the floor, and being aware of what body messages there are there, because just in that process, you might identify something about some part of your body that coming down onto all fours is showing you that you didn't notice before, and then moving from there, and then having that spinal awareness. So as you move your spine, being open to where can I take my awareness along my spine, and are there any parts of my spine where I can't actually go, and have I noticed that I skipped that bit, now I'm up towards the upper part of my back, why can't I get my awareness into that mid thoracic part, or wherever it might be, exploring that spinal awareness. And it sort of gives you many insights then as to, you know, where your awareness is able to go, where it isn't able to go. And then perhaps using the power of visualization or imagination to to put a color or a light or a feeling there and massage that through, so that even though your awareness might not be going there, you're putting it there through visualization and intention. Mm. So if there is an energy block sitting there where your awareness can't go, you are sort of nudging it along.
Mm. And is it that it can't go there, or is it that it doesn't want to, that want to? And like, that's a worthwhile question to ask, you know? Like, it's sort of sometimes it would, but I think sometimes it'll be a block where you can't even see that there's a wall, you know? It's sort of like my experience in kinesiology treatments. It's sort of sometimes you kind of like, you know, that you're trying to do something, like move, like say in a muscle test, you know, you're trying to move that muscle and you just can't kind of make it happen. And then there'll be other times when it's just not there.
Mm.
I don't know if you've had that experience, but there's sort of times when it's like, can you move your leg like this? And I'm like, I don't even know how to start doing that. Mm. And that sort of like both of those things sort of tell you something about where you're at in the process of recognizing and dealing with whatever it is.
Absolutely.
But the key thing is that there's a sort of teaching that I've been listening to lately, which is just very simply that consciousness is healing.
Yeah.
So you don't need to do anything else. You know, it doesn't have to be complicated. It can just be that you take your awareness to that point, up to wherever you get to, that will heal it and take you further. You know? So it's sort of you have the power to do this.
Mm.
There's no special tricks or tools required.
Well, and it's not, there's no end point. There's no end point. So it's like being open to how have I arrived on the mat today, or on the grass, or wherever you are, doesn't have to be the mat, but how have I arrived to this point of inquiry today? Because every time you come there will be different because you're different.
Yeah.
You know, your experiences up to that point were different to the last time you came here.
Mm.
So it's being able to have that level of acceptance and self-inquiry and curiosity to be exploring what's going on. And you know, when we work with the breath, it's another sort of area of inquiry then, to stop controlling the movement and let the breath move you, and that takes you into another experience by being able to, you know, let the in-breath lengthen you and wait until the out-breath's ready, because quite often we will force it. We will think, oh, I'm at the end of the in-breath, now I'm going to start tucking my tailbone under, and the out-breath isn't even ready to become expelled yet.
Or you might not even have finished breathing in, but you've got to the end of your spine movement, so you start going back the other way while you're still breathing in. I know that I've caught myself doing that sort of in a less mindful practice at times.
Yeah.
So you sort of like, where are you working to? Are you working to the extent of your physical movement or your breath? And and can you let that breath be the guiding point, which is so valuable? I think I remember an early experience with the cat when I was first sort of studying it, was that you start by being very physical, and that's natural. You know, like you start with that physical layer because that's where you can easily move and experiment and experience and very clearly see the sort of results of that in your body. But then as you start going a little bit deeper, you find that there's a lot more to it. So I remember sort of first doing the cat in the physical way, and then the suggestion was made that try not going as far as you can. You know, don't go to your full extension of the spine when you're breathing in. Don't come into your full flexion of it either. Like, like lots of people sort of have to work with perhaps a hyperlordosis or something, which means that they've got to be very careful of their extension anyway, but it works the other way too. Like when you're coming in, it's a very much a squeeze of the front of the body. And what if you just don't go all the way, you know, and then try that, try moving from not quite all the way to the very end points of each physical movement and see how that changes your experience. And it's quite profound.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's another way of working.
And so still that can, the breath can be guided, or the breath can guide that. It's just, you have to work slower.
Yeah.
It comes back to that slowing down. Like the cat moves in their own time. The cow grazes slowly and digests in their own time. You don't rush it.
And that's so multifaceted, isn't it? And this conversation, I think, highlights that multifaceted sort of awareness of this asana, especially. And then there's those points, you know, if you think of the breath as having four parts, then when you do reach the end of your inhalation, there could well be a very comfortable pause there before you start to breathe out and move back the other way. So what does it feel like to rest in the pause? And what arises out of that still point?
When the body is still and the breath is still. Because there's sort of two ways of working with that, isn't there? There's sort of the, and not so much in the cat, because it's very flowing with the breath. So if the breath pauses, the pose pauses. And then when the breath moves, the pose moves. And I think that's probably my understanding of the benefit of the cat. But certainly there are other yoga poses. And you could try it in the cat too, of can you reach that extension gently and then allow the breath to continue? And then let the body come back into the into neutral and then into the contraction when it's ready, but the breath continues. It would be interesting to play with that too.
But I mean, they're not like long pauses, but they're just, they could be very, very short, but it's just that acknowledgement of, oh, there is a slight pause there before the breath, the out breath rises back.
It's like being on a swing. If you're on a swing and you, and if you're like, maybe not if you're only just swaying back and forth very slightly, but if you're, if you've ever been on a swing and you're taking it as high as you can, you know, and there's a pause, there's a hesitation at the turning point
at the top,
at each end of the arc. You reach the top and you hang moment. It's just a moment, but it feels like if you really wait for that moment, you, and you, you bring your awareness to it, it, it's sort of an eternity, you know, in a moment. And so you hang there. And then you come back, and then you hang at the top on the other end of the arc, and then you come back. So I sort of, I find the cat to be quite arc-like in that sort of a similar experience in you're sort of moving through this, this wave, and then you get to the top and you pause, and then you move back through the wave and you get to the bottom and you pause, and or the top on the other side rather than the bottom would be neutral. So yeah, it's, there's a lot to be found.
And then there's almost always that sort of, benefit of finding a baseline. So just taking the time before you start to feel like, what do I feel? How does my spine feel? And so that you've got something to compare it to when you've spent a little bit or invested some time into working with this cat posture, but then how do you feel at the end? Because sometimes if we're not mindful of that, well, then we've got not much to compare it to as to, well, I can't remember how I felt when I started.
Haven't you?
So, yeah, so how do, you know, how does it make you feel when you finish?
I find it to be a very refreshing practice. Sort of, it invites a lot of movement. It invites a sense of sort of core engagement and groundedness, but still expansion. And so, I find it to be comfortable and refreshing. And so good for the spine. Like, you know, it, you're our only, unless you engage in variations of the cat, which is another great thing about it. There's so many. And being on that hands and knees, I think, invites a playfulness with the spine. Like, can you wag your tail?
Well, I was going to say, you can do the lateral sort of movements and see what they feel like very gently, sort of like, as imagine you're a, you know, you're a catfish and, and you start wagging your tail and you're moving through the water. And what's happening to your catfish whiskers as you...
You brush your hips with them.
See, it's playful. It's bringing it out in us.
It is. I think so.
So that's something, yes, it leaves you... It does. It obviously leaves you feeling a bit playful and curious.
Yes. Yes. The cat is curious, as we know. The
cat is curious.
We will continue on... with our next asana discussion with the bridge next week. So we will see you then. Thank you for listening.
Thank you for listening, and go and play. Go and play with the cat.
Be a springtime kitten.
Bye.
Bye.